the sun-kissed California Valley, where he had known only peace and contentment, Buck was transported suddenly into the fierce lands of the North. There he learned the law of the club and the fang, of life and death, the law of survival. And there he heard for the first time the call of the wild. Buck's father had been Judge Biller's constant companion. Now Buck was following in the way of his father. At four, he was king of the Miller estate in the Santa Clara Valley of California. He would romp on summer days with the judge's sons, or would accompany the judge or Molly and Alice, Judge Miller's daughters, about the countryside. One day...
Come on, Buck. Come with us. We're all going down the lane to look for berries. Well, good afternoon, Manuel.
Good afternoon, Judge. Young ladies.
The gardens look beautiful.
Gracias, Señor Judge. Gracias.
Gracias, Señor. Gracias. You won't be so blamed thankful when I get through with you, Manuel. Yeah, me. When are you coming across with that 75 you owe me? I don't like welchers.
No. I pay. Give little more time. Then my luck will change, no?
Pay your gambling debts or you won't live long, Manuel. I'll give you 3 more days, see?
Yes. 3 days. I pay. Somehow I get the money.
Manuel was greatly worried over the threat of the gambler. Having a weak character, he went to a saloon to try and drown his sorrow.
You know, they're buying dogs up by the hundreds for trail work in Alaska, Frank. I'm looking for a few right now. Let me know if you hear of any.
I wonder if they pay enough, there would be that buck. Mister, I hear you talk, yes? I have dog is very good for work, but cost much money. Maybe $100, maybe more. You like?
That's a lot of dough, but if he's worth it, I'll pay. Where can I see him?
Tonight. I meet you at train station.
Buck could not read the newspapers, or he would have known that trouble was brewing for Strong Broggs in that year of 1897, the year when gold had been discovered in Alaska. That night, Manuel and Buck went for what Buck imagined was merely a stroll.
A good thing Buck, Senor George, is away.
Yes. If the judge had not been away and the children busy with matters of their own, things might have been different. Leading Buck by a rope, Manuel soon reached a little flag station known as College Park.
You like this dog, eh? What do you say?
$100, eh? Okay, he'll do.
I have the money. You take dog. Pretty soon train come. I go now.
Oh, wait. You flag the train. Maybe I'll have my hands full with this dog.
You take rope, him no trouble.
The stranger was right. When Manuel passed the rope to him...
He no like you twist rope. Choke him plenty.
Like this, huh?
Look out!
Are you... Ow! My hand!
Pull your rope! Buck in all his life never been treated so bad.
And never had he been so angry. But the rope tightened mercilessly, and his strength ebbed. He knew nothing when the train was flagged and the men threw him into the baggage car.
Hey, keep my dog in here for me.
Sure, mister. But what's wrong with him? He looks mighty sick to me.
The dog has fits. Got to take him to Frisco to a crack doctor there. Thinks he can cure him.
Sure hope he doesn't have any more on the trip.
The next Buck knew, he was locked in the baggage car of the train. His throat and tongue paining terribly. All night the train roared on, and the next day Buck was transferred from the train to the rear of a saloon.
Hey, Charlie, can you keep this animal in the back room today?
I guess so. He's a big one. Looks mean, too. How much you getting for him?
All I get is 50, and I wouldn't do it again for 1,000.
You paid the other 100. Well, he's worth 150 any day.
With life half throttled out of him, Buck tried to face his tormentors. But he was thrown down and choked repeatedly. Finally, they had filed the heavy brass collar off his neck. The last remembrance he had of the good life left behind.
There, that does it. He's a nasty critter, all right. He'll have that knocked out of him before he's finished. Once he's in this crate, he won't be so dangerous.
In the morning, 4 men, ragged and unkempt, approached the dog's prison. Buck stormed and raged, but it did no good.
Look at him! He's wild!
It's a good thing he can't reach us. Let's get him on that train before he breaks loose.
The crate was taken by the men to the railroad yards. For 2 days and 2 nights, the train traveled behind a shrieking locomotive. Then more men handled the crate, and at last, Buck was delivered into a high-fenced yard.
Hey, you ain't gonna let him out of that crate now, are you?
Sure, stick around. You'll see some fun.
Buck rushed at the splintering wood of the crate. Wherever the hatchet fell on the outside, he was there on the inside.
There, you redneck devil. You'll be out in a minute.
That's 140 pounds of fury.
Buck had never been struck with a club before. With a snarl that was part bark and more scream, he launched himself once more at the man with the club.
Hit him again!
Again the shock came, and Buck was spun in the air. This time, he was aware that it was the club in the man's hand that hurt him so fiercely. Again and again, he rushed the man without caution and only a fierce hate. But he was no match against the club, and finally, he lay senseless on the ground.
Well, Buck, my lad, maybe you've learned your place.
He may be beaten, but that dog ain't broken yet.
Help me put him in the show pen with the other dogs.
So Buck was placed in a cage, where men came to look at him and the other dogs there. Sometimes dogs went away and never returned. Soon Buck's time came, in the form of a man who was a Canadian government courier.
That one bully dog. How much?
300, and a present at that. Seeing it's government money, you got no kick coming either, Perrault. You know dogs, and you can see that this buck is one in a thousand.
Take money for that buck, and Curly too.
Soon, Buck and Curly were on the deck of the Narwhal, bound for Alaska.
That last you dog's gonna see of Seattle.
Nom. Where you get him, Perrault? That big dog. What a beauty.
Plenty strong, this buck, eh, Francois?
Buck was taken below decks where he met Spitz, a white husky from Spitsbergen, and Dave, a morose and gloomy animal. Of his two new canine acquaintances, Buck preferred Dave, for in spite of his apparent friendliness, Spitz looked treacherous, and Buck proved to be right. At his very first meal on the Narwhal...
Here, Buck, you eat his bone. Get back, Spitz!
Quick as a flash, Spitz snatched the bone. In a fury, Buck attacked.
Get out there, Spitz. Buck need his bone.
Nothing remained for Buck but to recover the bone. That was fairer, Francois, he decided, and the half-breed began to rise in Buck's estimation. Day and night, the ship throbbed to the tireless pulse of the propeller. It was apparent to Buck that the weather was steadily growing colder. At last, one morning, the Narwhal's propeller was quiet.
We finally here, fella. What the matter, Buck? You shaking? You never see snow before? Well, you're gonna see a lot more. Cold, slippery, white all over the ground.
The first day at Dyea Beach was like a nightmare. Buck, come from civilization and people who loved and looked after him, had been suddenly thrust among savages, both animal and human. He had earlier been introduced to the law of the club. Here he learned the law of the fang. Soon after Buck and his traveling companion were turned in with the other sled dogs, Curly approached the leader of a pack of huskies. Curly's advance was friendly, her tail wagging. There was no warning, only a leap like a flash of lightning. In a moment, the pack of huskies surrounded the combatants in an intense, silent circle. Curly, forced to fight, rushed the vicious leader. The big white husky met Curly's rush with his chest in a peculiar fashion that tumbled her off her feet. She never regained them. This was what the onlooking huskies had waited for. They closed in upon her, snarling and yelping and flashing their fangs. Curly was buried beneath the bristling mass of bodies.
Come on, Perrault. These dogs has got one of ours.
Get!
Poor Curly. They no play fair with the new ones. 2 minutes it take those killers.
Look at that Spitz, the way his tongue hang down. He look almost like he's laughing.
From that moment, Buck hated Spitz with a bitter and deathless hatred. Before he had recovered from the shock of Curly's tragedy, Buck received another shock. He was placed in harness like a draft horse at home. That meant he was going to have to work.
We go hauling firewood, eh? Now we see how this buck can do. We put you, Buck, between Dave and Spitz. They pull many times before. You follow them. Now, mush!
Buck's pride was sorely hurt, but he was too wise to rebel. He had no choice but to follow the example of the other dogs. Under the combined teaching of his two mates and Francois, Buck made remarkable progress. When they returned to camp at the end of the day, he'd begun to fit in well.
3 very good dogs, Perrault. That buck pull fine. I teach him quick as anything.
He's good. I get more dogs today. We start right away, eh?
The days that followed were hard to bear, but Buck learned quickly and did not really dislike the work. He learned many things about teamwork and about survival. He learned to sleep curled warmly under the snow, to take his place in harness without earning the displeasure of his mates. And he learned to be sly, for in the wild, sometimes only the wisest and the slyest are the ones who survive. Perhaps it was his wily slyness, more than anything else, that first marked his change from the civilized life he had known. He was learning to avoid the dangers of the club and fang. In spite of Buck's refusal to fight, Spitz's instinct told him that the dog from the Southland was a threat to his leadership, and the white dog continually looked for a chance to drag Buck into a battle to the death. Early in the trip, that battle might have taken place had not fate stepped in. The two men and their team had ended the day at the very edge of Lake LaBarge. It was a bad place to camp, but they could go no further. Buck was weary from the day's work. After much searching, he found a protected spot under a ledge of rock and dug in for the night. So snug and warm was the spot Buck had found, he was loath to leave it when Francois called him to chow.
Here, you, Buck, come for your fish. You hungry, eh?
When Buck finished his ration and returned, he found his nest occupied. A warning snarl told him that the trespasser was Spitz. Till now, Buck had avoided trouble with his enemy, but this was too much. The beast in him roared.
Quick, Francois, look!
It was not at Buck and Spitz that the frantic Perrault rushed with a club. A pack of hungry wolves, their appetites whetted by the camp odors, had sprung among them. Buck and Spitz checked their fight to battle the invaders.
Get out of here! What are you doing?
But even while Buck was defending himself, the treacherous Spitz would not miss an opportunity to strike. In the midst of the attack, Spitz rushed Buck from behind, sprawling him into the oncoming wolves. It was by the narrowest of margins that Buck escaped the deadly fangs of the hungry pack. But he was not given to meditation. Buck was a creature of action, and the taste of victory was good. When it was over and the pack had been chased off at last, Buck turned to the hated Spitz and would have opened the feud once more.
Not this fighting, you two dogs, or I beat you within inch of your lives.
One day it come, hero. These two gonna fight to finish.
From then on, it was war between Buck and Spitz. But each had to conceal his hate because of the ceaseless toil the men required of the dogs. Over the 30-mile river, Perrault hurried them toward Dawson. Perrault was dauntless. On and on they pushed. One day, crossing the river, Perrault leading the way for the sled.
Hold them back, Francois. I go through. This ice is bad here.
Maybe we stop here, eh, Perrault? Give time for rest.
We got no time stop. We go right away, soon as clothes dry out.
At last, on a dreary afternoon, they pulled into Dawson, with a great fight between Buck and Spitz still to come. The long trek had been torture on the dogs. Finally, out of harness, Buck curled up for a long-needed rest.
Plenty of stuff for Skagway, Perrault. Some mail and all these government dispatches. How soon can you start?
You ask me? I go right away now, eh? But one thing. These dogs, they need rest, not Perrault. When dog's okay, Perrault is okay.
After 7 days of rest, they were back on the trail again. Perrault took pride in his job and thought he might make a record trip, for the return trail was hard and no new snow had fallen. Buck dug his claws into the hard snow and pulled with all his mighty strength. No one would suspect watching him that hate simmered through his being or that he was just biding his time. The second fight for supremacy, the one that was to determine the dominant primordial beast, came about most unexpectedly. They made camp one night about 100 yards from the camp of the Northwest Mounted Police. Camp had settled down more or less when suddenly one of the dogs flushed a rabbit. In an instant, the camp was alive to the scent of the hunt. Buck soon was in the lead, with Spitz closely challenging him. The rabbit, frightened for its life, raced along the river in the moonlight. As they passed the camp of the Northwest Mounted Police, 8 more dogs of that camp also joined in the wild chase. So intense had the chase become that neither Buck nor any of the other dogs noticed Spitz veer off to cross the neck of land projecting into the river. The pack had not yet gained on the rabbit, but Buck knew that soon he would wear down his prey. And then, suddenly, Spitz appeared just in front of the rabbit. Before the rabbit could turn, Spitz grabbed him. With a vicious twist of his head and a clamping of his powerful jaw, Spitz broke the rabbit's neck and tossed it into the air. Buck, roaring on ahead of the pack, went straight for Spitz. The time had come. As far as Buck and Spitz were concerned, the rabbit was forgotten. Savagely, Buck charged at the big white Spitz, but Spitz was a practiced fighter. Meanwhile, the pack of huskies made short work of the rabbit and now settled down in their deadly expectant circle to watch the terrible struggle. The fight continued. In vain, Buck strove to sink his fangs in the neck of the big Spitz, but Buck could not penetrate the enemy's guard. Now he was cut and bleeding while Spitz was untouched. But Buck possessed one quality that made for greatness, imagination. He lunged for the throat once more and then, in the last instant, swept low to bump the shoulder of his enemy, tumbling off his feet. Spitz, however, was ready and braced himself, then slashed again with the deadly fangs. At long last, Buck stood winded, while Spitz now sprang to the attack, keeping Buck staggering for footing. Once, Buck went sprawling into the midst of the circle of waiting huskies, but he recovered himself and the circle sank down again and continued their wait. Again, Buck charged at Spitz's throat. But at the last instant, his head shot lower, taking Spitz's foreleg in his powerful jaws, he broke it. Despite the pain, Spitz struggled madly to keep on his feet. He saw the circle closing in on him with gleaming eyes and lolling tongues. Again, Buck charged and broke his enemy's other foreleg. Both Spitz's front legs were now crushed by Buck's powerful jaws, and he knew the end had come. He struggled to keep on his feet, but there was no hope for Spitz. Mercy was a thing reserved for gentler climbs. Buck sprang in and out, and while he was in, shoulder met shoulder, and the huskies ended their wait. The circle closed in for the kill, and Spitz disappeared from view. Buck stood and looked on while the others devoured his prey. Buck, the successful champion, the dominant primordial beast, had made his kill and found it satisfying. The next morning...
Look, Pierrot, this Buck, he's been in big fight. Spitz no has come back. What I say, someday one kill other.
Maybe now we make better time. No more Spitz, no more trouble.
Okay, now we put this Solex in lead. Harness him.
What is this? Buck, you get back. Back!
What you say about this Buck, Pierrot? Look, he killed Spitz and now he want to be lead dog. He's smart, eh?
No had enough experience for lead dog, Francois. Put Solex back there.
Come on, you Buck. Eh? So you're gonna fight? Now maybe you go away, eh? Ha! I thought so. You not stand up to man with club.
I give up, Francois. Better part of hour we waste already trying to get that Buck in traces. What we do?
Try him in lead. Maybe he do good job. We not waste any more time.
Put Solex back in his old position. You, Buck, come here. You laughing, aren't you, Buck? Okay, you lead dog now. Mush!
Highly as Francois had valued Buck, he found while the day was yet young that he had undervalued him. At a bound, Buck took up his duties of leadership. For quick thinking and acting, he showed himself superior even to Spitz. But it was in giving the law and making his mates live up to it that Buck excelled. Any dogs that had grown unruly, Buck now proceeded to lick into shape. It was a record run. Each day, for 2 weeks, they had averaged 40 miles.
Francois, Pierrot, you're way ahead of your schedule.
14 day we make trip. Some good, eh? And that Buck, he kills Spitz. Then how he go. How he make team go.
Seven dogs, I'll say.
Finest team I ever see.
Then, 8 days later, a message came to Pierrot.
Headquarters said they guessed I'd find you here, Pierrot.
Yeah, we go back for a new job. No can take dogs. I go tell Francois any dogs. Now I hate to leave you, Buck. Best dog I ever know. And I got to leave you here.
That was the last of Francois and Pierrot. Like other men, they passed out of Buck's life forever.